Now, I want to look ahead to the inaugural session of the new European Parliament, which will take place this coming week. And all attention will be on the vote on Thursday on the bid by Ursula von der Leyen to secure a second term as President of the European Commission. She came in for criticism last year and indeed in recent months during the European Parliament election campaign over her response to the attacks by Hamas on Israel, where she said that Israel had the right to defend itself without putting that much emphasis on Israel's obligations under international law. In Gaza, the official death toll now stands at more than 40,000, although many more are feared to be dead. Violence has also increased on the West Bank, with mounting concerns internationally about violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians. The settlers, who live in what the international community regards as illegal settlements, are protected by the Israeli army. I've been speaking to Issa Amro, a campaigner against such settlements who uses non-violent methods. He lives in Hebron on the West Bank, a particular flashpoint over many years, but more so in the lifetime of the current Israeli government and indeed since October 7th. Issa Amro has been telling me exactly where his house is situated.
My house is in Tel Rumeida in Hebron, very close to Ramat Yashai settlement in the Olive Yards area. The settlement is next to my house.
What are your relations with these settlers like?
First, we don't have any relationship with the settlers because I see all the settlements are illegal according to Geneva Convention Article 49. And at the same time, the settlers are our oppressor. And there is no way to have a normal relationship between the oppressed and the oppressors. And the Israeli settlers are under the Israeli civilian law, and I am under the Israeli military law. It means two sets of law in the same area for different people. And the settlers are usually fanatic and extreme, and they use violence against us from time to time. That is the relationship.
You had a recent example of how your life under military law and the settlers' life under normal Israeli police civilian law played out. A settler came and attacked your house and began to destroy a part of the house as a soldier, an Israeli soldier, was watching.
Yes, it's not the first time. It's not only happening to me. It's happening to many, many Palestinians in the West Bank and in Hebron. Settlers attack Palestinians, and the Israeli army does nothing to stop them or to arrest them or to give any security to Palestinians. The Israeli military main goal is only to protect the Israeli settlers.
What you've described online have been crimes against your property, but you have also been the victim of crimes against the person back in October and indeed before that on multiple occasions.
Israel wants to shut off the Palestinian voices. Israel doesn't want anybody to expose its occupation, its apartheid, its illegal settlements, and they want us to accept the occupation and to coexist with it. But because I resist that peacefully, I became a target for the Israeli army and the Israeli settlers. So I was arrested, I was detained, I was ill-treated by the Israeli soldiers, and I was attacked physically many times by both Israeli settlers and Israeli soldiers. And in October, I was kidnapped, beaten, and tortured and sexually assaulted by Israeli soldiers and Israeli settlers.
How many times has this happened to you, that you've been physically attacked?
Physically attacked, I was attacked many, many, many times.
And in October, you feared
settlers
for your life?
And by soldiers. Yes, but in October, I was almost killed. I was lucky to go back home alive.
And as you say, you are a peaceful activist against settlement. How common is your experience amongst other activists you talk to?
Yeah, I am a peaceful activist. I'm well known of my nonviolence philosophy and approach. But I was attacked, and many other activists the same. The Israeli army and the Israeli settlers attack Palestinian families, and they attack Palestinians physically because the soldiers and the settlers are not accountable for their violence.
And the situation in the city of Hebron, it has got worse since October 7th, but it has got worse even in recent weeks, with new settlements getting permission or being set up or settlers entering houses in the city.
Yes, they are working to physically remove Palestinians from their homes and bring settlers to live in the city. That's the main Israeli government and army strategy, to remove the Palestinians and bring Israeli settlers live in the city. That's the strategy in East Jerusalem. That's the strategy in the West Bank, and it's led by Israeli officials, Israeli government. It's not an individual act or groups act here or there. It's governmental plans, governmental strategies, which aims to take more and more Palestinian land, to remove the Palestinians, and to keep the Palestinians in ghettos, to force them in the future to be expelled to Jordan or Egypt. That's the long-term solution for Israel, to have Israel from the river to the sea without the Palestinians, or with the minimum number of Palestinians who accept to be slaves inside their own land.
I notice your colleague told the journalist Thomas Helm recently, this is your colleague in Hebron, Mahan and Kafeshet, he told Thomas Helm, "I lose hope 20 million times a day. What strengthens me in all of this is seeing countries recognize Palestine as a state." Ireland is one of those countries that has recognized Palestine as a state. What does it need to do to make that a reality on the ground?
Ireland should work to make the occupation and settlements and apartheid costly for the occupiers. They can do a lot to punish Israel for its occupation, according to the international law, to ban the settlement goods from coming to Ireland, to ban war criminals, Israeli war criminals, from coming to Ireland. They can do a lot. We need them to do actions to really make a change and make the occupation and apartheid costly for the occupiers. The right-wing extremists or fascist settlers are controlling the Israeli government. The future, to be very honest, is very dark, and they, unfortunately, are not accountable. The Nakba didn't end. It's going on for us.
And that was Issa Amro. He's an activist in Hebron on the West Bank, speaking to me earlier. Neil Richmond, in the Dáil session just gone by, it was a big moment, Ireland recognising the state of Palestine. You've heard from Issa Amro there that the reality on the ground in the territory Ireland will recognise as the state of Palestine is seriously fraught, to say the least. He himself is at personal risk. So what further steps is the government going to take now to make the rhetoric a reality?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's important. And the next stage we want to get is more countries to recognise Palestine. So when we recognised it, we did alongside Spain and Norway. Slovenia have since recognised. Belgium indicated that they would too, but then they had an election, a different government, so we'll see what happens with the new government. We've increased our level of funding to UNRWA, we've increased our level of funding to the Palestinian Authority, both bilaterally from an Irish point of view, but also through a European point of view. And where the real discussion has to come on is to get the European Union to move its position a lot further. So we, alongside Spain, asked for a review of the EU-Israel Trade Association. We asked for that review back in March. It's underway, looking at what we would see as clear breaches in the human rights conditions.
Sorry, have you been, because initially there had not been a response from the Commission to your request.
We still haven't had the response.
So how do you know the review is underway?
Sorry, they're considering our review. Sorry.
Okay, so they're considering the request, but you haven't.
We've submitted
any.
We haven't got a indication yet, but we raise it at every issue. The Taoiseach raised it at the last European Council meeting, as did the Taoiseach at the last Foreign Affairs Council meeting, and the Taoiseach will raise it again this week on the 18th July at the European Political Community meeting.
Might it have been an idea in the context of the European Council to make Ireland's support of Ursula von der Leyen, the government's support of Ursula von der Leyen, conditional on that review being immediately begun?
Well, we've made it quite clear that we disagreed absolutely with Ursula von der Leyen's immediate response to the conflict, to Israel's actions. Her Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said it to her directly. But ultimately, conditionality we don't believe would have come into it. We've made it quite clear that we want to see a change of tack in the European Commission, but we obviously review that an appointment of a President European Commission takes in a whole plethora of policy issues.
Is there no horse trading done when a government lends its support to a candidate for President of the European Commission? And could this not have been something that Ireland would have made at least a stipulation, or that it said it would have made the process of the government ratifying it a bit easier if she had have begun this review?
Well, look, I wasn't in the meeting room of the European Council, and these are closed meetings, and there's an awful lot of discussion that goes on. We are well aware of what Ireland's relevance is within the European Union. We're a strong member state. Our position on the situation in the Middle East is absolutely clear. Our position and our issue with Ursula von der Leyen when it comes to this is absolutely clear. from a Fine Gael point of view, we do believe that she is the best person to lead the European Commission who's been presented, based on the very many other areas, be it Ukraine, COVID, NextGen EU, and all the other policy areas that go in. But we will continue to push this, absolutely.
All right. Matt Carthy, do you think that was a lost opportunity? Do you think it should have been conditional on the government lending its approval? Or would you be more of the view that under no circumstances should the government have supported Ursula von der Leyen?
Oh, I don't believe that it is tenable to say on the one hand that you support a two-state peaceful settlement in the Middle East, that you support the rights of Palestinians, and then to support one of those international leaders that is frustrating all of those things, and that is Ursula von der Leyen. And what we've just heard there is a very, I think, concise analysis as to why the situation in Palestine and Israel is as it is. And it is because for decades, Israel has been in blatant breach, gross violation, in fact, of international law, and has suffered no consequences whatsoever. We need changes, obviously, within Israel and Palestine and within the wider region. But the truth of the matter is, until we have leadership at US level, for sure, but within our control at a EU level, that actually insists on the idea.
Have bilateral relations with the United Kingdom, and during the recent election campaign, the Labour Party, a part of its manifesto said it would recognise the state of Palestine. Now, they're a permanent member of the Security Council. Should Ireland perhaps pursue those channels in order to try and get the UK on side and to fulfil that?
Yes, but where we had direct influence was in the election of a Commission President. The reason the Commission hasn't commenced its review of the EU-Israel Association Agreement is because Ursula von der Leyen is opposed to any such review. She is opposed to any meaningful sanctions being placed on Israel. And if Europe wants to have credibility on an international stage as being a voice for rule of law, international multilateralism of the international humanitarian law and the UN Charter, well then you can't turn right. the other way
would
when
you
it comes
that
to the genocide that is being perpetrated in Gaza as we speak.
Would you accept there may be other commissioners in the European Commission, say, you know, that from countries that have been traditionally supportive of Israel, that would be equally as keen to frustrate those efforts as Ursula von der Leyen, if
yes,
indeed she is personally keen to do it?
We don't get to select other people's commissioners. What we do have a hand in is the selection of the president of the European Commission. Now, the truth is, and I think Neil will accept this, as soon as Ursula von der Leyen announced her candidacy, Fine Gael said that they were going to support her. That's fair enough. What I find more and absolutely dishonest is the position of Fianna Fáil, who ran in a European election campaign saying they were going to oppose her. And as soon as the European elections were over, our Minister for Foreign Affairs, the leader of Fianna Fáil, basically rolled over and said, we'll support but Ursula von der Leyen too. And I think that is cynical in the extreme.
Right, well, Fianna Fáil, in the first instance, are clearly not here to defend themselves. But of the MEPs we've made efforts to contact this morning, they're still of the position that they will vote against Ursula von der Leyen's candidacy.
Well, here's the difficulty. Can I speak to that? Because the difficulty is, for some bizarre reason, the vote in the European Parliament is a secret ballot.
It is.
I've just, with myself and Breach this week, watched Fianna Fáil TDs publicly U-turn on a previous position in relation to the Shane O'Farrell case, which I hope we'll have time to talk on. So I don't have any confidence whatsoever
that is their stated position to us
they promised.
But there's a couple of points on this. Well, number one is, absolutely, she should not be voted in, given her position on Israel. The recent sort of expansion of settler violence in the West Bank is unbelievable. They're on a rampage. And the figures of the number of Palestinians killed by the military in the West Bank since October the 7th is 536, 70 killed by settlers. But the level of violence, the torching of homes, the persecution of livestock even, driving farmers off mountains, taking over their homes, persecuting their families, roadblock, and everything that they're doing is unacceptable. And there is no opposition from Europe on this, and particularly from Ursula von der Leyen. In fact, any criticism of it is dismissed as being anti-Semitic. You're anti-Semitic if you criticise it. So I think absolutely they should not vote for. But it doesn't hinge on Ursula von der Leyen's vote whether we implement the illegal settlements bill, that Francis Black bill, on the banning the importation of illegal settlement products. fact, because she got, Frances Black got, legal advice from several experts of EU law to show that Ireland can comfortably go ahead and implement that bill themselves without, you know, clashing with any EU trade dealing. And if they did and EU wanted to take them to court, they could go and defend themselves. But that would not happen, because the legal opinion right across the EU is that the illegal settlements bill could be implemented. The fact that we're not doing it is disgraceful. Great that we recognise the Palestinian state. You can hear and see how the Palestinians take huge comfort from that, but it does nothing to punish Israel. And unless we punish Israel, the sort of slaughter that we saw last night in Khan Yunis, 79 people butchered, and people rescuing people who were being slaughtered, also getting slaughtered by bombs and bullets from Israel. Unless we stop that and punish Israel, then we are going to be looking back at this period in history the way we look at the Holocaust now back in the 1940s. And I'm not anti-Semitic in the least, but I am shocked by the level of violence and cruelty that's been accepted by the leadership, the political leadership of the world, and by the political leadership here.
All right, Neil Richmond, the... Sean Kelly has been, your colleague and MEP, Sean Kelly has been calling on Fianna Fáil MEPs to support Ursula von der Leyen, saying that, you know, to abandon that would be to be the equivalent of almost supporting Donald Trump. Do you think that that's a bit much? I mean, even the EPP within the European Parliament before, they dumped their own candidate at the last time of asking, Manfred Weber, and Ursula von der Leyen was drafted in by, I think... Chancellor Angela Merkel as the candidate. Is it really that big a deal if people vote against her?
Well, I think one thing that hasn't been said is, how do we choose the European Commission president? And I think it was referenced to, we have a Spitzen candidate. So each political group, the EPP, which were a part of the left, which Matt and Breed are both a part of, put forward a person. And the EPP did get the most votes. They actually increased their seats in the European Parliament.
Sure, but I suppose...
So therefore, an EPP
candidate. She's a Spitzen candidate by, and this is where the largest party in the European Parliament, the candidate they put forward, is then put to a vote by the European Parliament, having been approved by the European Council. But at the last time out, Manfred Weber was the Spitzenkandidat, and he was dumped, and Ursula von der Leyen was imposed, and as a result she became president. So she wasn't a Spitzenkandidat at the last time of asking.
No, but she was still a candidate of the European People's Party, and it was reflective of an overall discussion in relation to the President of the European Council and the High Rep, which
back,
has happened.
Back to Sean Kelly and what he... Fianna Fáil MEPs are entitled to their own vote, aren't they? It's a secret ballot. They made commitments during an election campaign. Is it not more akin to the bad politics that Sean Kelly is referring to if people break an open election promise and the mandate on which they were elected?
Look, they promised to vote for the ALDE, the Renew Spitzen candidate. It's a secret ballot. I might add, just like we, when we elect our Ken Corla, is a secret ballot in the Dáil as well. The Fianna Fáil candidates are fit to vote for whoever they want. There's one name going before the European Parliament. I think now is a good time for Europe to choose a European Commission president. I absolutely will not for an instant shirk and say that Ursula von der Leyen has got the situation in the Middle East very, very wrong. Yes, we've got sanctions against settlers and we've got movement in certain areas, but when you look at her record, particularly when it comes to Ukraine, it looks at COVID and looks at what the European Union is facing internally and externally in the coming years, I do think she is the best candidate.
I think it's
I would encourage, I just finished the point, Matt, I would encourage people to vote for her. And also, if you look at the alternatives and their position in the Middle East, the Socialist candidate wasn't much different, neither was the Green candidate or the Renew candidate.
All right.
I think it's very disingenuous to compare the role of Ken Corla to the position of President of the European Commission. I don't for the life of me know why the European Commission President is elected by secret ballot.
Surely you were there when they decided the process.
I voted twice, and actually I wasn't. The Lisbon Treaty decided the process, as I thought you would have known, Neil. But it does smack of a space to allow people to do things without
actually
being held
accountable. It also allows people to dissent. So I think about 10% of members normally dissent in the European Parliament.
This is, I think, is actually the crucial point, because at the end of the day, Ireland has 14 MEPs out of 720. So who knows what the margins will be, but we will have a fairly small voice. Where we did have a voice was when we were one out of 27 at a council level, and Ireland walked in and offered unconditional support for Ursula von der Leyen without getting any assurances that there will be a shift in policy in terms of her disgraceful, absolutely disgraceful.
I'll come back to you in a moment, Breed Smith.
But Israel and Palestine.
I do want to get Neil Richmond's response just on the point that Breed Smith was making about the Occupied Territories Bill.
Yeah.
The goods that come from settlements regarded as illegal under international law in the occupied territories don't come from Israel. So why is Ireland concerned that the EU position in negotiating a trade deal with Israel would affect goods coming from a place that, by definition, are not on Israeli territory?
Well, it's not the Irish concern, it's the legal advice. And I fully respect France has got alternative legal advice, but we are bound by the legal advice of the Attorney General. I will say, though,
which is old.
And as I finish the point, the Taoiseach has asked for update advice. I believe he has been given it, but it's not public knowledge yet. I haven't seen it yet. This isn't something that ethically we're against, but it's like everything when it comes to EU. And
politically,
especially
you're against it. You voted against it, or your party did.
And when
before
I was voting,
there was any legal advice.
And there was legal advice at the time. There was legal advice at the time. Because I remember voting against it in the Shannon and making it quite clear that we understand the moral, absolute objective of this. But like anything when it comes to EU and trade and agreements, if you don't do it right, it will fall apart and turn you into an outlier.
This is nonsense. I mean, the last Attorney General's legal advice was threadbare, as Frances describes it, threadbare. And she's now about to publish new legal advice from the highest legal European Union legal opinion that you can get. And she's about to publish that in the next couple of weeks. So watch that space, Neil, because what you're talking about is nonsense. It is absolutely possible to pass that bill. Absolutely possible.
That's your opinion, but the legal opinion differs, Breed.
No, there's different legal opinions on this. And that's my point.
We're bound by the legal opinion of the Attorney General.
Just let Breed Smith finish without interruption.
And the minimum the Irish government can do, as well as recognising the state of Palestine and flying the flag for one day, the minimum it can do is to pass this bill. It can do a lot more. It could expel the Israeli ambassador, ban war criminals, as the man that was interviewed earlier on said, and he describes what's going on there as right-wing extremist fascist behaviour, and it absolutely is, and there's an urgency to this, and I hope when France has published that legal opinion it puts your government under huge pressure. There is nothing stopping you passing this, and certainly not anything in the EU.
I just on one point, and I know you want to go think there is things stopping us from. And it's unfair to say that when we have
in
quite clearly...
Can I make a point? Advice.
No, you see, neither of us are barristers. You can't say that. If you don't like the legal opinion, that's one thing. But we have to be bound by the Attorney General.
We're going to take a break because when that legal advice is updated, and perhaps when that other legal advice is published, we can return to that particular issue and debate it on another programme.
Colin, the horse trading has gone on. They're getting Michael McGrath for voting for von der Leyen. That's why they're getting
Michael McGrath was nominated
as an economic...
That's a political star below you.
We're not going to get into how Michael McGrath was selected or indeed his role as commissioner. We don't have time. We've got to move on to other things. We're going to look at the legislation that was pushed through in haste towards the end of the Dáil to give the government the right to strip naturalised citizens of their Irish citizenship.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.